We're on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, approximately 15 lines down from the top of the Amud, and you'll see Omar Rabbi Chiyo Bar Rav Ashi, Omar Rav. So we're continuing our discussion about different shiurim for different types of foods. As far as Erev Tchumen is concerned, Omar Rav Chiyo Bar Rav Ashi, Omar Rav Ma'arvim B'Bosor Chai. So you're allowed to use raw meat for an Erev. Here we have a Machlokas Rishonim. Some Rishonim take this Gemara literally, and it means raw meat, Kipshuto. And B'Shas Adchak, if need be, it's edible. You know, classically we give raw meat to a cat to eat, but if necessary, we'll give it to a human being, and therefore it could be used for an Erev. Other Rishonim disagree, and they say we have to be talking about salted meat, and it's got to be heavily salted, otherwise it's not edible. Omar Avshimi Bar Chaya, Ma'arvim Bebeitzim Chayos. Now, I don't know if Raki will mean anything to you, but you can make an Erev with raw eggs, and it's considered something that's Roy Lachila, that any human being could, if need be, B'Shas Adchak, he could swallow a raw egg. It's not going to kill him. V'kama, how much is the shear, the measurement of an egg that could be considered lilafes ba pas, that it could accompany a pas for two sudos. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Sinai Omar. Sinai is an appellation for Rav Yosef. He was called the Sinai. Sinai means he was very profound in his thinking. Shtayim. So we need two eggs. In other words, each egg for one meal. Each meal gets one egg. Now let me just read a note here. First of all, the Rashba says that the same exact shear of two beitzim applies to cooked eggs or roasted eggs. The only reason the Gemara mentions raw eggs is to tell you that even that's considered edible and is included in Eruv. Okay then, what else? Yeah, that's what we have. That's what we have so far. All right, now we're going to begin a kind of a new sugya. I mean, it's obviously it's related to Erevin, but we got to go back to the Mishnah. And the Mishnah tells us that Hanoder min hamazon muter b'mayim u'b'melach. Lefisha eno dover mazon. All right. So a person took a neder, and he enjoined himself from eating mazon, and therefore he's excluded from everything but water and salt. Water and salt is not called mazon. Now, before we see the Gemara's diuk, I just want to, you know, sort of give us a little bit of a clue. We're going to have to underline the word mazon, because there's another word that's very similar to mazon, and the Gemara is going to make a big deal about the distinction between these two words. And that other word is zan. So you could have something that fits the category description of zan, but it's not called mazon. Zan has to do with feeling satiated. And there's a verb from the noun zan, which is called zayne in Aramaic. So those are things that satiate you. Mazon is something different. Mazon is like a staple it fills the body with healthy calories and it strengthens the body. So keep that in mind as we go through the sugya. So now the Gemara has a diuk in the language of the Mishnah. Melach umayim hudlo ikri mazon. Are you telling me that within the definition of mazon, because again he took a neder min hamazon, that includes just about everything? You know, throw in there, who knows, you know, beverages and maybe rice and potatoes, I don't know, throw it all in there. It's all mazon. Because the Mishnah says that melach umayim lo mikri mazon, hakol midi ikri mazon, implying that everything is considered mazon. Now, take for example rice. I mentioned rice before. So what bracha would you make on rice? If you follow this diuk over here, rice is not water or salt, you would make a bori mine mizonos on rice. Well, that's impossible, because then we're going to go a step further, and if you eat an egg, maybe that's also bori mine mizonos. There's something missing here, that something very confusing. If you're going to tell me that everything with the exception of salt and water is considered mazon, then are we going to make a bore mina mizonos on everything? Lema te hevi tuvta de Rav Shmuel, de Rav Shmuel amri shavayu, ein mevarchem bore mina mizonos, ela al chameshes mina bilvat. According to Rav and Shmuel, what is called mizonos, what is called mazon, or in plural mizonos, it's only the five species of grains. Rice, for example, millet, certainly it goes without saying, eggs and milk products and all that stuff are not included in bore mine mizonos. And unless you belong to the five species of grains, then don't talk about mazon. Whereas in Amishnah, he took a neder min hamazon, and he's also in everything. Again, with the only rare two exceptions of salt and water. Now, the Gemara says that we're all up in arms. Why? Because we have a Mishnah that contradicts Rav and Shmuel. All right, let's get excited about that. A Mishnah that contradicts Rav and Shmuel. That's very disturbing. Says the Gemara, long ago we've proven that the Mishnah never accepted the sheet of Rav and Shmuel. Don't get excited from our Mishnah. V'lo osvina chada zimna. Didn't we already reject Rav and Shmuel based on another Mishnah? And that Mishnah is in Masecht Brachos, in Perek Ketzad Mevarchim. And the Mishnah says that Orez V'dochan, which loosely translates as rice and millet, Mevarchan Aleim Bori Mina Mizonos. It's not from the five species of grains, and yet we recite Bori Mina Mizonos. So the methodology, the structure of this Gemara is a little bit different. The Gemara is saying, Lema, you know, I learned this Mishnah here in Erevin, and I was medayik a diuk from the Mishnah with regard to Nedarim, that Mazon is a much more expanded category, and it goes way beyond the five species. And the Gemara says, don't get so excited about it. We've already schlugged up Rav and Shmuel from a different Mishnah. Because the Mishnah tells us that in the cases of Orez V'Dochan, you recite Borei Mine Mizonos, even though they're not part of the Chameshes Mine. So the Gemara answers, Lema Tevi Tuvtayu Nami Miha. The whole point here of our Gemara is to add insult to injury, meaning I have another Mishnah that contradicts Rav and Shmuel. Lo mi boy, we have a Mishnah in Masechta Brachos with regard to Orez V'Dochan, but you should know that the Mishnah in Erevin likewise contradicts Rav and Shmuel. Comes along Rav Huna, and he says, no, you're making a big mistake. If you read our Mishnah and interpret it properly, accurately, it does not contradict Rav and Shmuel. Again, you have a Mishnah in Brachos about Oris V'Dochan. Okay, we'll have to deal with that Mishnah. But don't tell me that this Mishnah here in Erevin contradicts Rav and Shmuel. Omar Rav Huna. Rav Huna says that there's a difference between mazon and zon. Two different words. And he says the following. That our Mishnah here in Erevin, when we're talking about a person who takes a neder, it's not a case of a neder from mazon, like for example, you know, a classic nusach of a neder would be konam ex alai. He didn't say konam mazon alai. That wasn't the case of our Mishnah. But rather, the Omer, what did he declare in our Mishnah? Konam kol hazon alai. Anything that is zon, which is not mazon. Do you follow? Those are the two words. There's zon and mazon. Or zon, as I said before, if you turn it into a verb, it becomes zaini. And zaini is not the same as mazon. Zaini is something that, you know, fills me up. If you give me enough fruits, enough melon, I don't know, whatever your favorite is, you can feel satiated. That doesn't make it mazon. Mazon is on a special level. It's a madrega b'fnei atzma that Rav and Shmuel talk about the five species of grains. You can take the five species of grains and you can define them as mazon. They do something to the body on a almost on a permanent basis. Not just this temporary kind of feeling of zaini. You know, I feel, oh, I'm happy. I feel satiated. No, no, no. Mazon means something much more than satiation. And Rashi used the term here, soadim es halev. Mazon is something that's not only zaini, which would mean zan, but it's also soed es halev, as if to say it's healthy for the body. I mean, the lev here is just a symbol of health, so the bodily health. Now, in our Mishnah, he said, konam kol hazon alai. And anything could give you a sense of satiation, as long as it has a couple of meager calories. For someone who's on a diet, for example, he can eat something that you and I would never feel satiated from, but he feels satiated because he's on a diet. So you give him Weight Watchers, you know, he's got he weighs it out there and some of it, he feels satiated. The only exception is salt and water. You know, you can eat all the salt in the world, drink all the water in the world, you will not feel satiated. You're still hungry. Is therefore, in a case of Omer, Konam, Kol Hazon, Olai, Kol Hazon, then the Issa applies to all foods and beverages, with those two exceptions, even though they are not Soed Es Halev, they are not Mazon. So a person feels Savea, that's called Zon. You said Kol Hazon, Olai, but Konam, that excludes all food and all beverages, with the exception of those two. But if you talk about mazon, for example, if you want to discuss a bracha called Bore Mine Mizonos, so Mine Mizonos, how many Mine Mizonos are there? There are only five. The five species of grains are the five Mine Mizonos. If you want to talk about any other species like orez or dochan and call it mazon, No go. It's not Muslim. Don't you make a bar mina mizonos on rice. And again, when we're talking about mazon, what two conditions this upgrade mazon? Number one, it's mazbia. You have a sense of satiation. And number two, it's soed es haliv. If there was only one condition, and you would define mazon as something which is masbia, then you're breaking down the difference between mazon and zan. Mazon equals zan, and zan equals mazon. So kol hazon olai, which would mean anything that gives me a feeling of satiation, even if it's not soed es haliv. And that would include all foods, basically. But now we're saying there's a fundamental distinction between zon and mazon, and the discrepancy, the gap between zon on the lower level and mazon on the highest level is soed es haliv. Says Rav and Shmuel, what is soed es haliv? Only the five species of grains. And if you talk about bori mine mizonos, then my goodness, it's not enough to say that it's masbia, and I feel a sense of savea. No, mizonos. I need mizonos. I need mazon. And mazon is not just masbia. Mazon means soed es haliv. Now again, as I said before, it's very difficult to translate this phrase of soed es haliv. You'll see it in Shas, you'll see it in Rashi. The best I can do, and I hope I'm right, is that it gives the body an upgrade in a very specific way. We'd have to do a scientific study about the difference between, for example, wheat and rice on a scientific level. But be that as it may, the way Rav and Shmuel perceive mazon, which is soed es haliv, it's only bread, or the grains that make up bread. All right. So now the Gemara comes back with another question. V'chimayim u'melach hu delo zayni. Hakol mile zayni. Are you really true? Are you really telling me something that is accurate? That the only two foods in the world that are lo zayni are melach and mayim. But everything else, and we're going to have a discussion now about fruits, are considered zayni. Is it true that if I eat fruits, I can get to a stage in which I feel satiated? I remember, I'm just reminiscing a story, when my wife and I went to a vegetarian restaurant. And after they served the main course, and we ate the very nice vegetables and stuff, I said to my wife, when are they bringing out the main course? But this was the main course. And the sense is that you can feel satiated from, if you eat a lot of vegetables, a lot of fruits. So the Gemara says, I'm going to tell you a story. And this story is about Tveria and the fruits that grow in the area that surrounds Tveria. Those are called Peros Gnisar, or Gnosar. And actually, if you travel up towards the north, you'll see a sign towards Kibbutz Gnosar, which is north of Tveria. So but the fruits there were very, very special. I don't know if today it's the same, but back in the time of Chazal, in the Talmud, Peros Ginosar was like a Chalashem Heftza, it was an entity unto itself. So Kiav Azlina Basri de Rabbi Yochanan, right, we were the Talmidim accompanying the Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan, in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan was in Eretz Yisrael, to Tveria. Le Mechal Peri de Ginosar, right, in the area that surrounds Yam Kineret, there are fruits that are called Peros Ginosar. And The next piece of Gemara is very hard for me to understand, but I'll just translate it to you. They brought masses of volumes of Peros Ginosar to Rav Yochanan. And he ate them all. Like, yeah, I don't know if I should take this Gemara literally or not, but Ribbono Shel Olam, don't fault me, I didn't write the script. I'm just going to translate the Gemara. The Gemara says, to describe how many of Peros Ginosar they presented to Rav Yochanan, Ki Avinan Be Mea, when we had 100 Talmidim who were carrying the burden of the fruits to Rabbi Yochanan, so they divvied it up amongst 100 different Talmidim. Yisavi mankini l'chol chai v'chad asor asor. Every one of these 100 Talmidim would carry 10 peros. You know, give them a bag with 10 inside. But ki avina be asor, sometimes we only had a group, a small group. You know, it was a Friday morning shiur that Rabbi Yochanan gave for a select Talmidim. Only 10 Talmidim would show up. So then, havi mankinen kol chad v'chad mea mea. Each Talmud would carry a sack of 100 peros. So the number is always the same. It's either 100 students carrying 10 each, which is 1,000, or it's 10 students. Each one was carrying 100 fruits, which gives you 1,000. V'chol mea minayu lo avi machzik luhu tzana bas tlosa savi. He says that the peros was so large that 100 of them would be greater than a sal of 3 sa'im. I mean, that's the tremendous value. You would need a basket large enough to hold 3 sa'im's worth of grains in order to hold one fruit. That's how large they were. Now, I don't know exactly how the Talmidim were able to carry such large fruits. You know, this reminds me of the story of the Meraglim. Vavi ochalu lekulu. And Rabbi Yochanan ate all of them. So I figured, you know what the Gemara means? They put it in the refrigeration, in storage, and over the course of a month or two, he ate all these fruits. I don't know. Even a month or two, I don't know if you can eat 1,000 of these gigantic fruits. I don't know. It's like mind-boggling. But that's not pshat. The pshat is that he ate it in one sitting. How do I know this? Because Omar, he said, Shvuasa, I'm going to take an oath to lo timely ziyuna, that I have not tasted something that is mazin, right? We said that if you take the word zan as a noun and you convert it to a verb, it's mazin, which in Aramaic is called ziyune. Which basically means, friends, students, I'm still hungry. L'achalti l'sova. Again, Rabosai, I cannot tell you what this means. But maybe in those days, I don't know, they were such gdolim that you know, they had to eat tremendous amounts and they still didn't feel satiated. So the bottom line is that you want to tell me that our mission includes all foods. Under Zan, when he took a neder, and he said, "Be Omer Kol HaZan Olai," and everything is included under Zan, with the exception of salt and water, because it's Zaini, it gives him a sense of satiation. Well, that's not true, because Rabbi Yochanan ate 1,000 fruits of Peros Ginosar when he was around Tveria, around the Yam Kineret, and he still declared, with a shvua yet, I am not satiated. So the Gemara answers, Ema Mizona. No. That's not what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yochanan didn't take a shvua that he wasn't satiated. He was satiated. But what he meant to say was that he hasn't had mazon. In other words, there's nothing here that's soed es halev. These are the greatest fruits, the largest fruits, tastiest fruits, peros ginosar. You know about it all over the world. Everybody's importing, you know, peros ginosar from Tveria. But at the end of the day, it's not mazon. Ema Mizona. The shvua that Rabbi Yochanan took was that this is not a taste of mazon, because mazon is a dover asoed as a live, and there are only five species of grains that fit that bill of soed es halev. But all these great fruits, Rabbi Yochanan wasn't denying that he felt satiated, but it wasn't mazon. That's what Rabbi Yochanan wants to say. So don't be too impressed, as Rabbi Yochanan, by peros ginosar, because as great as they are, they still don't meet meet the grade of mazon. Because mazon requires chameshes amin. So you might say, well, you know what? I'm going to make a borei mine mizonos on a vast, large amount of fruits. Why? Because it's mazon. The answer is, it is mazon. I'm not denying that. If you eat enough fruits, you know, you won't be able to eat for a week. You'll be so satiated. But it's not mazon. And the bracha is borei mine mizonos. And with all due respect, it's mazon, but it's not mazon. It's zan, which means zaine in Aramaic, but it's not mazon. And mazon is a separate category that only applies, according to Rav and Shmuel, to the five species of grains. The Gemara disagrees with Rav and Shmuel on two counts with regard to rice and millet, because that too, according to Chazal, that's not Rav and Shmuel's opinion, is also mazon, and it's soed es halev. And just as a footnote, this might have implications as far as matzah is concerned. You know, what's the status of rice matzah? Would it be considered matzah? So I would tell you the following, that even though we make a borei mine mizonos on rice, which is against Rav and Shmuel, but we would not make matzah out of rice. Because borei mine mizonos luchud and matzah luchud. Matzah is called lechem oni. And rice might be mazon, but it's not lechem. Okay. Now the Gemara goes into a very fascinating discussion about a person who took a neder or a shvua, and then on that very food, very substance that he enjoined himself from eating with a neder, he left it as an eruv. Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav. Shvua shalo ochal kikar zu ma'arvin lo ba. Even though he took a shvua that he won't eat this specific kikar of lechem, that kikar of lechem, which he's not allowed to eat by virtue of his shvua, is still kosher for an eruv. Now, when I read this Gemara, I got very excited. But it was a false alarm. The Gemara doesn't mean what I think it means. You know, I'm reminiscing now, if you're interested, when I was a Rebbe, my first position in education was in a place called Ma'ale Adumim, where my wife and I lived for a number of years. And there was a Hesder Yeshiva, and the boys came over to me. They were all graduates of the Yeshivot Tichoniot here in Israel. Most of them came from that time, from Netiv Meir in Beit Vagan. That was the largest contingency. And they saw that I had a style of learning that was totally foreign to them. Like, it was really interesting to them. So there's a group of boys. The head of the group is now a Rebbe in Ma'aleh Adumim, in the Hesdi Yeshiva. And they came to me and they said, Rabbi Bursa, could you give us shiurim on your methodology, so we can have more of an appreciation of this? And this started a project that I continued for years and years. I mean, my wife is still angry at me that I never published on this topic. But it was a Derech HaLimud Shia that I would give once a week in the Hesdi Yeshiva for my students in Ma'aleh Adumim. And as a result of that that series of lectures that I gave to the founding fathers of Malei Adumim, one of which was a Chaver Knesset, the other is the head of the dean of the law school at Bar Ilan. I mean, it was an exceptional group of young men. These were the founders of it's called Berchat Moshe, it's the head of the yeshiva. And as a result of that whole limud, I remember when the yeshiva was celebrating its 10th anniversary, I was long out of Malei Adumim by that time. I was in a different head of the yeshiva. So they called me up and they asked me if there's any way that I could produce an essay on Derech HaLimud from the Shita Briskait, as they used to call it, for that publication. It's called Maliot Asar. I have it somewhere in this library. So they were, you know, 10 years later, they still remember that series of lectures. So the first lecture was about the first Gemara in Masechta Nedarim. The Gemara at the beginning of Masechta Nedarim, Daf Beis, asks the question, what's the difference between a neder and a shvua? And the Gemara says that neder is ka'asar cheftza nafshe, and shvua is ka'asar nafshe min cheftza. The difference between a shvua and a neder is that in a neder you asa the cheftza on yourself, and in a shvua you asa yourself from the cheftza. And I pointed out that I have no doubt in my mind that this particular Gemara was the, shall I say, Keresh Kvitzad. He said it was the springboard for Reb Chaim's famous distinction between Gavra and Cheftza. And I really feel that Reb Chaim got it from a Talmudic text. You know, he didn't just invent it himself. He built a whole discipline, a whole science on this distinction. But the Gemara applies it to Gavra and Cheftza, to Shvua and Neder. Shvua is an Iser Gavra, and Neder is an Iser Cheftza. The Rush, who's a super commentary published on the page in the Nedarim, he has a clear about Nazirus, whether a Nazir is an Iser Gavra or an Iser Cheftza, is Yayin to a Nazir. Very interesting Rush over there. So I read this Gemara here about Erevin on Shabbos, which was just yesterday, and I got all excited. And I thought maybe the Gemara is indicating a difference between an Isa Gavra and Isa Cheftza. That in the case of a Shvua Shalo Ochal Kikar Zu, there's nothing wrong with the Kikar. The Kikar itself is a Cheftza de Tera. It's the Gavra who prohibited himself in a Shvua from the Cheftza. So the Cheftza per se is het there. And I thought that maybe the nafkamina is going to be Erevin. That when we exclude something from an Erevin because it's prohibited food, it's got to be an Iser Cheftza. You know, if you use Nevela or, what should I say, Tevel, maybe. But Tevel's a little more complicated because you could just be Marfish Tevel. But let's say you have a Cheftza di Surah of Kalaya Kerem and Nevela and Trefa and so forth and so on. That's excluded from an Erev. But a Shvua is not excluded from an air because there's nothing inherent in the Cheftza. I was very excited when I read this. But truth be told, that's not what the Gemara has in mind. What the Gemara has in mind is a distinction between what's called Isurei Achila as opposed to Isurei Hana. And that which is disqualified from an Eruv is got to be Isur Hana. It's not enough to say that it's Osir Bachila. So what the Gemara is pointing out here is, in the name of Rav, that if he took a Shvua, Shalo Ochal Kikar Zu, prohibiting himself from Achila, but not from Hana, is Ma'arvin Loba. It's kosher for an Eruv, and the reason for that is because it's a Heter Hana. There's nothing Osir Hana here in this case. Had he taken a Shvua that would encompass not only an Isra Achila, but would generate an Isra Hana as well, then in such a case, he would not be able to validate his Erev with something that's Osir Behana. Now, you might ask me the following question. Why is this so? What's the underlying logic here in the Gemara? If mazon shtei sudos is to be taken literally or simply on the surface level, for me this is not mazon shtei sudos. What good is it that it's mutter b'hana? Why does that make it mazon shtei sudos? So for example, if a person takes a shvuah shelo ochal kikar zu and he wants to sell the kikar to a guy, he's permitted, he's allowed to do so because there's no isur anna. But why does that therefore make it mazon shtei sudos? So the answer is that he can invite anyone else to eat this kikar. Every Jew on the world can eat this kikar. And normally speaking, if I have something that's also by Noah, I'm not allowed to feed it to you because I get hanah from the fact that I'm giving it to you as a gift. But now that we've established that kikar zu lo ochal is limited to an isur achila, but he's allowed to benefit from the kikar, he's allowed to invite others to eat from this kikar, is therefore it is mazon shtei sudos. So it doesn't have to be mazon shtei sudos for me when I'm leaving it as an eruv. For example, you remember we discussed the nazir, yayin le nazir. Yayin le nazir is kosher le eruv. Even though for me, if I'm a nazir, I can't drink this wine. But the answer is I can invite anyone else to drink this wine. And when we say that ein ma'arvin el b'dovar aroy l'achila, it means dovar aroy l'achila to somebody, that I can feed it to somebody, even if I myself could not eat it. The only problem I have here, just on the side, I'm not here to confuse you, but it does present, at least for me, a problem, is that the Gemara later on, which the Rashba quotes here, says that the reason why ma'arvim l'nazir b'yayin is mishum d'yachol lishoel al niziruso. Now I think we're talking about gavra and cheftza. In other words, if this gemara of shvua shelo ochal kikar zu is, according to the Rashba, meant to be an analogy to nazir, yayin le nazir, which ma'arvim bo, then we might be indeed talking about a difference between an iser gavra and an iser chefta. Remember I mentioned to you that yayin le nazir, according to the Rush, at the very beginning of Masechta Nedarim, the Rush vacillates whether it's an iser chefta or an iser gavra. Now let's assume, which I think is the Rosh's maskana there, is that yayin l'nazir is an isur gavra. And one of the ways of gauging, and you know, your barometer to know whether it's an isur gavra or an isur cheftza, is the permanence of it. In other words, an isur cheftza is permanent. An isur gavra means right now I can't enjoy it. The Torah says I'm enjoined from eating it or drinking it. But down the line, I'm mutter. There's a something that will become mutter or could become mutter. It's not an iser cheftza. Cheftza means it's inherent in the cheftza, in the very molecular structure of the cheftza. It's a cheftza di sura. It's metam temes aleh. So the sugya later on is going to say that ma'arvim l'nazir b'yayin because is efsho lishol al niziruso. Oh, now we go back to shvua. And we're going to say that the reason why Shvua does not preclude and disqualify it for Muslims for an Eruv is because it's Efshel Lishoel. Maybe what the Gemara has in mind is that there's no Iser in the Cheftza that's inherent in the Cheftza. And the proof is, the barometer is, that I can be Shoel on the Zirus in that case, or here on the Shvua. And that itself is a proof positive that it's not an Iser Gavra. That's not an Iser Gavra, it's only an Iser Gavra. But alternatively, you could say, no, what the Gemara has in mind is that it's Mutar B'Anah, and therefore anyone else in the world is allowed to eat it. I can benefit from it because there's no Iser Anah, and therefore it's Mazon Shtei Sudos, not for me, but for someone else. And that's what the Gemara means by Yayin L'Nazir. Not what the Gemara is going to say later on to explain one sheet of Sumchus, that it's nitan leheter al yidei she'ela. He could be shoel on his nazirus. Now let's read the next line in the Gemara, and this is really going to baffle us. The Gemara says, "Aval, if he says kikar zo olai, ein ma'arvin lo ba." Now, in the case of kikar zo olai, Is the Gemara shifting now over to a neder, or it's still a shvua? And I read it shvua kikar zu alai. If it's still a shvua, then why does it say ein ma'arvin lo ba? Ah, but the answer is because kikar zu alai, and he didn't mention ba'achila. If he didn't mention ba'achila, then the shvua incorporates even hanah. Therefore, it's not Muslim shtei sudas because there's no way I can get anyone to eat this kikar. And once again, this further proves that we're not talking about a distinction between gavra and chefta, but rather we're talking about a distinction as to whether or not he can invite others to partake in this food, meaning if it's only an Isra Achila Bilvad, then it's royal Eruv because I can invite others, like the Gemara of Nazir Liyayin, which means that the Nazir can invite other people who are not Nazirim to drink from his wine. But if he leaves out the word achila and he says kikar zu alai, what he means is that kikar zu alai, an all-encompassing isur, both achila and hana. So Rabosai, what I want you to remember, or I want myself to remember, I'm just telling you to remember because I know I might forget it, so you'll remember for me and remind me that in terms of kashrus for Eruv, it would seem that it depends upon whether or not it's an Isra Hanna. So in the case of Yayin L'Nazir, it's not an Isra Hanna. In the case of Kikar Zu Shalo Ochal, then it's not an Isra Hanna. And if it's limited to an Isra Achilo, in the case of Yayin Isra Shtia, then it's royally Eruv. And why is it kosher for an Eruv? Because I can invite someone else to who's not a Nazir, or who didn't take the Shrua, to partake in my food. That makes it into Mazon Shtei Sudas. But if I have something that's Osir Behanah, then it's excluded from an Erev because I cannot invite anyone to eat from this entity, from this Cheftza. Meisvei. Now the Gemara asks a kasha on Rav Huna from a Braisa. The Braisa says, I know there mina kikar ma'arvin lo ba. Now, when you and I read this language of the Braisa, no dermina kikar, I don't know. It's a toss-up. Maybe it means that he was no der achila mina kikar. Maybe it means he was no der absolute, all-inclusive, even ano mina kikar. So the Gemara says, my love, my first, knee-jerk response when you ask me what does it mean when it says Hanodim and Akikar, my love, the Omar, when he said Kikar Zute Yasser Olai, is it says Ma'arvimbo, we're not going to say that he wanted to Aser Hanoh, but rather the Iker Hanoah. The Iker Hanoah is Achila. But Shar Hanos Lo Osar Al Atzmo. And this is a kash on Rav Huna, because Rav Huna said that as soon as you start with the word Kikar, then ipso facto, you mean to include everything as far as this Kikar. Kikar Zu'alai is not limited to Achila, according to Rav Huna. It encompasses even Hanah. The Nafka means he can't use it for an Erev now because it's Asur Ba'anah. But yet we have a Braisa that says, Hanodim and Akikar Ma'arvin Ba. And the assumption is, Hanodim and Akikar means Kikar Zu Alai. Now, Kikar Zu Alai, according to Rav Huna, is Asur Saiba Achila Saiba Hanah, and it's possible for an Erev. Again, the only case in which we could be matir for an Eruv is Shvua Shalo Ochal Kikar Zu. So he starts his Shvua with the word Ochel, and he indicates, not like another case of Kikar Zu Alai, but in this case of Shvua Shalo Ochal Kikar Zu, he comes to exclude Hanah. His Shvua is limited to an Isra Achila. So let's just read, Lo di Omar Zo. That the case in the Braisa, which says Hanodim and Akikar, and the Braisa doesn't specify exactly what the case was, we thought it means Kikar Zu Alai. No, it means Hare Alai Shalo Ochal Kikar Zu. And therefore, the Isra is limited to Achila and it doesn't include Hana. So Gemara says, Hochi Nami Mistabra. This is a logical way of understanding this price. So that we're talking about a case of a Shvu Shlo Ochal Kikar Zu. The Ketani Sefer, Emosai. Bizman Sha'omar Shvu Shlo At Et Ammena. In other words, when is a nodim and a kikar ma'arvimbo? If he takes a shvur shalo at amena, I won't taste it. So now the heter in the brisa is talking about this situation, this scenario, where he says shvur shalo at amena. That's how the brisa interprets it. At amena means achila. It does not mean Hano. Okay, now let's see. The Braisa is talking about a case of Shvua Shlo Ochal Kikar Zu. Avol, the implication therefore is Avol Omar Olai. As if he just said Kikar Zu Olai. My, what would be the din? Is Hachinami di Ein Ma'arvin Lo Ba? If he says Kikar Zu Olai, then Ein Ma'arvin Ba. The Hachi, why did the Bryce have to stretch its arm out to the case of Kikar Zu Olai? In order to explain under what circumstances the Erev is invalid. Adetani, Kikar Zu Hegdesh. Okay, so now we're talking about the next part of the Braisa. The next part of the Braisa has a different distinction. And it says, Kikar Zu Hegdesh, Ein Ma'arvin Ba. Lefisha ein ma'arvin begdeshos. All right, so we'll come back to that in a minute. But anyway, the Bryce is now stretching its arm out to a case of ein ma'arvin ba, invoking the case of kikar zu hegdesh. Forget about kikar zu hegdesh. Liflog velisli bidida. You should have gone back to the case of kikar zu alai and made the following distinction. But man, Dora Murim, when do we say that's kosher for an Erev? That's only the Omar. He said, Zo. Does he say a shvua that he won't eat this kikar? And that's why ma'arvin b'kikar avol omar olai. But if he said that the kikar should be asr olai, we said that ain ma'arvin ba. And why is that? Because if he says kikar zu olai, we assume he means ol hana. So why does the Tana, in order to find a case where it's also be Erev, the Erev is Pasul, it has to come up with the case of Hegdesha, right, of Hegdeshos. Forget about Hegdeshos. Who needs Hegdeshos here? All he has to do is differentiate between, did he say Shalosh, Shvua Shalosh, Ochal Kikar Zu, or did he say Kikar Zu Alai? And once he says Kikar Zu Alai, it engenders or adds an Isra Anna, and therefore it's invalid for an Erev. So you don't have to quote the case of Ma'arvin Bekdeshos to exclude and disqualify an Erev. Right here, you should have had two formulations that the Rav Kamina would be whether or not the Erev is valid. You should have Shvua Shalo Ochal Kikar Zu. Shlo Ochal Kikar Zu, as opposed to a case where he says kikar zu alai. When he says lo ochal kikar zu, he's clearly limiting his shvua to achila. Kikar shvua shlo ochal kikar zu. But if he says kikar zu alai, that means alai all encompassing, even as far as the Yisra'ano is concerned. Alright, so now we're getting more complicated, but let's take a break and talk about Hekdeshos. It says, Kikar Zu Hekdesh, Ein Ma'arvim Bolefisha, Ein Ma'arvim Be'Hekdeshos. So the simple pshat in this Gemara would be that Hekdeshos are Aser Ba'Noah. In fact, there's a whole Parsha Me'ilah, if a person enjoys the benefit of Hekdesh for his own purposes. And even if it's not Me'ilah, maybe it's not a Shavu Prut or whatever it might be, it's still an Isur Hanah. So we know that there's an Isur Hanah from Hekdeshos. Now, we have a Rashi that introduces another element into the Sugya. And this is the Rashi, Dibri Amasal Hegdesh. It's approximately, I'd say, just rounding it off, about 15 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. Alright, the Rashi is a little bit later in the Sugya, but I'm tempted to already mention this Rashi, even at this point, because Rashi quotes Lishnach Rina. So the first Rashi, Hegdesh, is like our interpretation of the Sugya, that Hegdesh always includes an Isur Hanah. You're not allowed to have Hanah from Hegdesh for your own purposes. But Rashi, on the bottom, about two lines up from the bottom, has a Lishnach Rina. Lamed Aleph, Lishnach Rina, 2.5 lines up from the bottom. Now, in this Lishnach Rina, Rashi comes up with another explanation, an entirely different explanation, as to why Ein Ma'arvin Be'Hekdeshos. And this is based on a number of premises. Premise number one is that an Eruv is a Dvar Mitzvah. I mean, again, we haven't discussed this. This is an issue unto itself. But Rashi in the Lishnach Rina is assuming that an Erev is a Dvar Mitzvah. This has to do with Sugyas later on in our Perek we haven't gotten to. The Torah says you're not allowed to go Chutz L'Tchum, but on the other hand we have this Takana called Erev. Is that, you know, under all circumstances I'm allowed to set up this Erev and then in effect walk Chutz L'Tchum? So there's one shita that says that an Erev is mutter because the Erev was set up l'dvar mitzvah, and only under those circumstances you set up an Erev. So a valid Erev only has to, is only l'dvar mitzvah. Now again, we haven't seen that sugya, so I'm not responsible. I don't know if we accept that shita, bottom line, l'aloch, that you can only set up an Erev to have tchumen l'dvar mitzvah. But let's go according to that shita. Now Rashi wants to say the following, that if a person takes a shvua and he says, you know, kikar zu alai, he's allowed to use it for an eruv, even if alai indicates an isra anah. Right, he doesn't say shvua shalo ochal kikar zu. He says kikar zu alai. And we're assuming, according to Rav Huna, that kikar zu alai indicates that he won't have any hanah. And nevertheless, it's quite possible, says Rashi, that such an Eruv, after he said Kikar Zu, a lie, would be a valid Eruv. Aye, Rav Huna says that Olai means even Hano. He's not allowed to have Hano from the Eruv. The answer is that he's not allowed to have Hano from the Kikar. And the answer is that setting it up as an Eruv is not called Hano. In other words, the reason why in Isuri Hano you're not allowed to use an Eruv, it would only be because you're violating your Isur Hanoah by having Hanoah's Erev. The fact that you're benefiting from the Erev and allows you to walk more than 2,000 Amma outside the city, that itself is a violation of the Isur Hanoah, says Rashi Nein. Why? Because the Erev is done Lidvar Mitzvah. And the reason why he's setting up this Erev is because of a Mitzvah. And if that be the case, we apply the principle. This is second rule of Rashi, second premise. Mitzvos lav lehenosnit. That since I'm setting up this era for purpose of a mitzvah, any anah that I get by virtue of the fact that I'm allowed to do this mitzvah is not called anah. Why? Because mitzvos lav lehenosnit. The Torah didn't give us the mitzvahs to benefit from them. We're doing the mitzvahs to fulfill the will of God, not for the sake of anah. Comes along Rashi now with a third premise, according to this Lishon Acharino. And that is that Hegdish is the exception to the rule. With regard to all Isuri Anah, the principle is Mitzvahs Lav Lehenos Nitnu, except barring one, and that is Hegdeshos. And Rashi says that in the case of Hegdeshos, he says, that if it's Hegdesh, then if he has Hanoah from it, the Torah specifically prohibited this Hanoah. So you might say, well, I'm having Hanoah to set up an Eruv, and that's a mitzvah. And mitzvah's lav lehenos. Says Rashi, no. We don't apply this principle of mitzvah's lav lehenos in the case of Hegdesh. And that's what the Gemara means here when it says, Ein ma'arvin behegdeshos. He says that even though you could be ma'ariv bekonomos, because the Erev is l'dvar mitzvah and mitzvah slav lenos, and we call him ein mevarim bekdeshos, mishum shehem asurim l'chol odom. Mishum shehem asurim l'chol odom. So this is something that we'll have to figure out what does he mean here when he says lefi. Just want to underline this. Mishum shehem asurim lechol adam, and therefore we're not going to apply the principle of mitzvos lav lehenos. Not sure why that's so, but b'li neder, hopefully by tomorrow I'll figure that out. So let's go over the liflog v'lisnid v'didei, that the Tan himself should have been mechalik in the kikar of chulin without stretching his arm out to kikar shel hegdesh. B'medvar mamurim, he could have said, when is it kosher for an eruv? That's only the amar shvushalo ochal kikar zu, where he specifically focused on the achila and prohibited it to the exclusion of hanah. Aval Omar, if he says a lie, right, kikazute yoser a lie, then ein ma'arvin bo, because then he generates an Isur Hano as well. And since the Tana didn't find that particular prescription to make a distinction, and a bamedvar mamurim, then it seems that the only case where it's usur for the Erev is only going to be a case of Hegdesh. And the conclusion is that anytime he asks himself on the Kikar, it doesn't matter whether he says Achila Bilvad or he extends it to include Hana, in both cases, the Erev would be valid. And perhaps what it means really is he can't have an Erev with something that's totally usur b'hana, but it may mean that even in the case of Kikar Zu Alai, the hano that he's referring to is only the ikar hano, which means achila, but not shar hano. It's like eruv. Rav Huna deflects this question. Elomai, so Rav Huna rejects the maksha by asking a kasha back. One kasha deserves another. If you can interpret the braisa the way you do, it's called Hecha Diomar Alai Ma'arvin. If he just says Kikar Zu Teyaser Alai, then it's kasher for an Erev. And all he has in mind is to generate an Isra Achila, which is the Iker Hanoah, but not other Hanos, is Kasha Reisha. I don't understand the Braisa and the Reisha. The Braisa says, Emosai Ma'arvin Lo Ba, Bizman Shomer Shavua Shalo At Et Amena. Which seems to indicate that only in this case you could be Ma'arv Ba, but if he would have said Kikuzu Alai, E Ma'arvin Ba. So the Gemara rejects this and says, Chisui Mechseva Ochitoni. Here's the way we should read the Braisa. Hanoder Min Akikar Ma'arvin Lo Ba. Ve'afilu Amar, even if he says, Kikar Zute Oser Olai, is Nase Kemisha Omer Shvua Shloat Emeno, meaning that his Kavan is not to generate an Iser upon himself for all Hanos, but rather just for the Iker Hano, which means Achila, and therefore it's kosher for an Eruv. Mikomakom Kashel Rav Huna. So we end up with a Kash on Rav Huna, who says that if he says Kikar Zu Teoser Olai, it's invalid for an Eruv, because from the Braisa we see clearly that only if he uses a Lashon Hegdesh, then Ein Ma'arvin Ba. And the Gemara answers that you're right, these words of the Braisa are certainly contradictory of Huna. However, we found the Machlokas Tanoim on this point. V'hu di'omer of Huna holds ki Rabbi Eliezer. The sign you have a Braisa that says, Rabbi Eliezer omer shvua shalo ochal kikar zo ma'arvin lo ba. But kikar zu olai ein ma'arvin ba. So Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with the Braisa that we saw before and holds that in the case of Kikar Zo Olai, it's Asur and it's Posel for an Eruv. So the Gemara asks the Stira in Rabbi Eliezer, V'chi Umi Omer Rabbi Eliezer Hochi, is this really so that if a person generates an Iser on himself with a Kikar, it's possible the Erev Asanya, we have a Braisa, a different Braisa that says Zaklal, with regard to Erev, we have a principle. In a case of a Kikar, then when he takes a Neder from a Kikar, Adam Oser Atzmo Bi Ochel, which means that a person who makes his Neder depend upon a Maisa Shu Osa Bi Atzmo, that's called Atzmo, Adam Oser Atzmo, meaning Bi Maisa Shu osa biatzmo, like for example, shalo yochal kikar zu, is ma'arvin loba. In other words, since the hana comes mimela, it's not through a pa'ula, which he does to bring himself a hana, therefore it's kosher li'eruv. Aval ochal hanesa loli adam, if a person says that this kikar should be osur on him, or shvur shalo enem mikikar zu, he wasn't told of the iser on his action, he just asks himself kol hano habolo miakikar, anything that he benefits from the kikar is ein ma'arvin bo. And that's the shita of the Tanakhama, this price. Rabbi Lezer disagrees, and he says, even in the case where he says kikar zo teyaser alai ma'arvin lo ba, and it would seem that the opinion of Rabbi Lezer reflects the shita of the Chachamim in the first price that we mentioned earlier, that only when he says Kikar Zo Hegdesh, then Ein Ma'arvin Ba, because the principle we said Ein Ma'arvin Be Hegdeshos. But in the case of Kikar Zu Teyaser Olai Ma'arvin Ba, so we have now a stira in Rabbi Eliezer, and the Gemara answers Tre Tanoi Aliba de Rabbi Eliezer. There are two Tanoim, two different transmissions of what Rabbi Eliezer holds in the case of Kikar Zu'alai. According to the Talmud of the Tanakhama, the first Braisa would say that Rabbi Eliezer holds that Ein Marvin Ba, but this last Braisa that we saw, the second Braisa, holds that according to Rabbi Eliezer, Ma'arvin Ba. Okay then, so we'll stop here on the bottom of Lamed Omer Aleph with Trey, after Trey Tanoya Libid Rabbi Eliezer. We'll start with the two dots, three lines up from the bottom of the Omer, Ma'arvim Lin Nazir.